Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today's Friday, January 19th. We're back with you. This morning, I'm joined by a new friend called Susie. Welcome to the show, Susie.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Awesome. Let me bring up your mic a little bit. You can talk closer to the mic so we can hear you.
Sure.
I didn't get a chance to brief you on the mic techniques here and everything, so bear with me on that. So thank you for joining me.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Of course. We have a beautiful day out, if you like, winter days, right?
Nice and gloomy.
Yeah. They said it might rain, but then again, when they say it might, it probably doesn't, you know? Mm-hmm. Because it rarely rains here, right? I mean, you told me you grew up here in L.A., in this area?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember it being rainier than it is now?
No.
It used to be rainier, you know, but we'll see. We'll still get a lot more rain, I hope.
It used to be rainier, you mean because of climate change?
Or? Probably.
Yeah.
Or something, I don't know. But whatever caused it, I know we used to have a lot more water in California than we do now, you know?
Yeah, there hasn't been very much, usually by December, January.
Yeah, yeah.
At least a few days. You're right.
Right. But usually I think February gets most of the rain, if I remember correctly. I lived here like 40 years in L.A., so I remember times when it would really pour out here, you know. We had what they called El Nino back like 15, 20 years ago, mm-hmm. and that caused like rains like nonstop. I mean, I've never seen it like this. And then since then, nothing, you know. I mean, look, 5 years we're in a drought, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't know. They have to find new ways to bring water here because we're getting to deep trouble with that, you know.
Yeah, it's a real problem.
Yeah. So tell me, what are some of the things that interest you? You told me you write, right? What do you write about? Is it fiction, nonfiction, opinion? What do you like to write about?
I don't know. Yeah, I like writing anything, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you write stories?
Yeah, I've written a couple stories. I took some creative writing classes when I was in college.
Okay.
And it was really fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know. They really teach you how to develop characters and plot and everything. I took one semester of that, and I thought, that's too hard for me. I just want to write a story.
What'd you study?
Well, at the time I thought I was going to go into journalism.
Yeah.
So that was part of the requirements, you know. You obviously want to know how to write and everything. And I don't know. I mean, the stories they presented to us were boring.
Yeah.
So I started writing my own stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And nobody could get it. So I'm like, I don't know, man. Maybe it's not for me.
Yeah, it's so hard too. I think everything sort of, I would love to be a journalist. That'd be like my dream job, you know.
Really?
But I feel like it's not really out there as much as.
Well, that's not true. I mean, the thing is that, you see, as a journalist though, it's not just writing, you know. You have to, well, at least if you're a reporter, you have to constantly chase people down for interviews and be there on the front lines and stuff, which is not a bad thing. But you know, if you just want to write opinion or features or something like that, then it's as simple as just sitting down and writing.
Not so much research.
Right. Yeah. Now, did you early on realize you like to write?
Always. I don't know. I grew up riding horses.
Ah, so how cool is that?
Yeah.
I know.
The thing I realized I like to do the earliest.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So do you live in a place where it's conducive to riding horses?
Yeah. I mean, as much as Southern
California
can be.
Right.
Yeah.
As long as you're not in the city, you're okay, right?
Yeah.
Wow. So do you have your own horse?
I do, yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. How cool is that? What's the name? Is that a male or female?
His name's Vincenzo.
Vincenzo?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. What's the origin of that?
It's an Italian name, but he's from Germany.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. How long have you had the horse?
I've had him since I was 12, and I'm 21.
So oh, wow.
A while, yeah.
There you go. You know, I mean, that's some time. Is that normal for horses to live long?
Yeah. They live they live usually, you usually retire them when they're 20. Uh-huh. And then you, like, they live until they're like 25 usually. And ponies live a little longer. They'll live until like their early 30s.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. So that's a pretty long time for a horse to develop a relationship with a horse, I guess,
yeah.
right? Wow. So, you obviously probably took training and everything, right, mm-hmm. early on. And today you ride effortlessly, I guess, right?
Yeah, yeah. It does take, I think it's something that if you don't learn when you're really young, it's hard to sort of catch up.
It really is, you yeah. know. I mean, I learned young, but then I haven't ridden in so many years
yeah.
that when I finally got on a horse, I felt, man, this is too much for me.
Yeah.
My body can't handle it. But it's also because I probably didn't know how to ride,
yeah.
right? So you feel your whole body bouncing and stuff. All your bones are shaking. And you go, what the hell? You know, I can't handle this.
Yeah, I feel the same way if I take, you know, if I go on vacation and have a friend ride my horse for me and then I come back, I feel like a noodle.
Really?
Yeah, it's really awful.
That's funny. Wow. After they ride your own horse?
Well, you can't, like, they need, especially when they're really fit, they just need to work every day. You can't.
Oh.
You can't just give them too much time off unless
really?
They need it for, like, some
yeah,
reason.
So they need to be active all the time.
Yeah.
Wow, very cool. Do you have siblings?
I do. I have two older sisters.
Oh, okay. And are they riders too?
Yeah, not so much anymore. My older sister has daughters, and she's teaching them how to ride. So she has some ponies.
Wow.
And then my middle sister doesn't ride anymore.
Yeah, very cool. Wow. Did you grow up on a ranch at all? Or?
So, I mean, it was sort of. It was like suburban, but my parents think they're cowboys, that kind of thing.
Cowboys in California.
Yeah.
There you go. Why not? Very cool. You know, I was thinking about horses the other day. We actually have a show here called Horse Ownership Experience.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about raising horses and racing them and stuff. And I thought, wow, what a world that is. You know, I mean, you go among those horses, it takes you away into a different world, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting that it's still around and that people still do it for pleasure, you know?
Yeah, I know.
It's sort of inspiring, you know?
I know.
That it won't die all the way, you know?
I know. I hope not, you know? Now, during the, like, the Wild West and everything, obviously, horses were main transportation,
mm-hmm.
you know? But I was reading, like, I mean, obviously, they didn't have easy life, those horses.
Right.
Huh? They were, like, I mean, people were abusing them in every possible way. It was, like, the main method of transportation.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Wow.
And they're living things. Yeah, it's probably better for them now that,
yeah.
that they're only owned by people who are really enthusiastic about
exactly,
riding
yeah.
horses. Yeah,
I know. Well, talking about life span and stuff, I started reading a book and we talk about, do you like to read? I mean, if you like to write, you obviously like to read, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I love to read also, and the listeners know that. I started reading a book called Homo Deus and A Brief History of Tomorrow. And this guy wrote a book called Sapiens, and he talked about the history of humanity
mm-hmm.
and stuff, how we started from the beginning. This time he's talking about the future, and it's very riveting to read because he tells you, for example, how humanity has always been just endangered always by famine, plague, and war.
Yeah.
And he says we pretty much have controlled all of these, you know, not a lot of famine, not a lot of plague, and definitely war is not what it used to be either.
Mm-hmm.
So as the reasons for people dying, you know,
mm-hmm.
so we've used all that. So now that he asks, you know, so what do we do now? You know, what do
yeah.
we deal with now? And I guess the biggest concern that people have is dying. You know, people don't want to die.
Yeah.
So, and because of that, because of the fear of dying, you start having religion and belief in so many different things, mm-hmm. you know, that people want to rationalize why they die and how to approach it. So it's better, you know, so it's easier to deal with, rather.
Is he pretty optimistic about the future?
Well, I only started the book, but what he's saying, the first part that I'm on is talking about, like, for example, like dying. Okay, so he says, you know, if people look at it as like something preordained or God's decision or whatever,
natural.
He says, but yeah, But you know, people try to rationalize it and stuff to feel better. But he says, as far as science is concerned, and culture, death is just a problem that needs to be fixed. You know,
mm-hmm.
And
do you agree with that?
I do.
Yeah,
I do. You know, I mean,
yeah, why not? I guess.
Right, because the body. I mean, what we're saying, obviously, we're not talking about people dying in accidents and stuff, but lifespan more.
Yeah.
And let me tell you why. He says, even if we do die, he says he foresees much longer lives, because think, just in the 20th century, we almost doubled lifespan from 40 to 70,
mm-hmm.
life expectancy. That's almost doubling it in one century. So imagine with our more advanced technology today, where we're going to be, you know, I mean.
That's so interesting, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I think it might be kind of a drag, though, to live that long.
Right, you know.
Yeah.
But
I don't know if that's a good, if that's what I'd want.
Right, but it,
but it
depends
cool that
on.
But someone's working on it, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it depends on how you view it. You know, if you look at it as like, you know, they're saying that if you knew you would live a lot longer if you didn't die, you probably would not take risks, because
yeah.
then you'd be just shortening your life for no reason.
Yeah.
So a lot of people would take less risks, but knowing you're going to die anyway, people, you know, go and climb the Himalayas and jump off planes and do shit like that that I can't possibly imagine doing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, people live so much longer than they used to now. It's sort
yeah.
of, it's not that weird to think of it being much longer than we think it might be.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, imagine living 150 years, you know. And all it is because, you know, if science only looks as if this is something that stops working and you need to fix it, and they find fixes, then you're constantly going to be improved. You know what I'm
mm-hmm.
saying? But this will for people to live forever or for a long time is universal. You know, it's existed for thousands of years.
Yeah,
and
it's scary to die.
It is, you know,
yeah.
it is. And we sanctify life in every possible way, and not in just religious ways. You know, I mean, I think the world is pretty much agreed that human life is scarce and important, you know.
Mm.
So, yeah, you know, so, I mean, sometimes people mix up, like, animals and people, you know. I mean, the thing is, I can understand, like, some people would say, well, if you had to save a human being or a dog from drowning, what would you do? And
you know. Of course, you're supposed to say the human.
Right,
yeah.
You know. Well, it's not about supposed to say. It's
yeah.
about, think about it, you know. I mean, human life
yeah.
really is the most.
More precious.
It really is,
yeah.
you know. I mean, look what we do in order to save lives, you know.
Yeah.
And this is not to put down animals. I mean, they have their place in the world as
yeah.
well. But I think humans come before that.
Yeah,
you know?
We have abilities that other animals don't have.
Yeah,
should be preserved.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you write, you told me you write about politics and stuff. Is that something that interests you?
I haven't done that much writing about politics except for my classes, but I definitely am interested in politics.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So you went for political science, did you say?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Political science, and I had like a concentration in political theory. Most political science majors have something that they specialize in.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
And what attracted you to that? I mean, that's pretty pretty difficult stuff, right?
Yeah, some of it definitely is. It's sort of like applied philosophy. I probably would have been an English major, but I wasn't that interested in doing that at college. I felt like I could read fiction on my own without anybody helping me, you know?
Right.
And I didn't have that much, I don't know, I sort of had this attitude towards my English teachers, like, well, they're not writers. They're not the authority on English. They're,
uh-huh.
you know, they write about books. They don't write books.
Right,
you know?
Right. It's like if you don't make it, teach, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I thought, like, well, I'll do something that I think is a little bit, like, more conducive to formal study. But I have a lot of respect for any, like, most of my favorite teachers have been literature professors. Of course, it's very serious work.
Right.
But I just, I don't know, I wanted to have my teachers be, like, really the people
involved.
Inventing, involved, yeah.
Yeah.
In, what was happening.
Wow. So now, the interest in politics, did that come before you started taking political science or after?
A little bit. I did like speech and debate when I was in high school, and I liked how opinionated everybody was.
Right.
And I liked the sort of the discussions that were happening, and everyone in my speech and debate group was going to major in political science, so I thought it might be a good idea because then I'd get to meet similar people. But there, yeah. And there were like a lot of opinionated, really, really interesting people in my classes. But there were also a lot of sort of like careerists who were just really like being serious about getting a job as a lawyer, which is, you know, probably more responsible.
Right.
Yeah.
So what, I mean, have you decided at this point, I mean, you're still young and stuff. I know at that point in my life, I was not really, I knew nothing about what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Do you believe you'll take a path in politics?
No, I don't think so.
No, huh?
No.
Is it too, what is it, does it intimidate you? What is it that keeps you away from it?
I don't know. It just seems like such a snarled mess right now that I don't want to get involved.
Be part of, huh?
Yeah. I think it'd be better to just think about it. I don't know. I think, like, everything's political, you know, like what you eat for breakfast and the way you talk to people is political. So I think it's good training, even if you don't use it.
How's breakfast political, for example?
Well, I mean, food's definitely very political, the way people talk about food, the way food's advertised and thought about, yeah.
Really? So people have opinions about it?
Yeah. Or just even like the, like if you talk about corn as being like this like special organic, like non-GMO, all this like normal stuff, it's corn.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. When you start talking about GMOs and stuff, there is politics in that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just sort of, it's just food, even if it's not any of those things. It shouldn't be such a special thing, you know?
Yeah, I know.
For it to be not that.
That's true, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. For everybody who can't see what's going on, we were just surprised by a last-minute guest, that I've always wanted to have on the show, and I've had you on the show before, Loda, right?
Yes.
And Loda Hadley joining us this morning right here as her husband is doing the show next door. So if you want to talk about loyalty, there you go. You're loyal to the station, and obviously you like me enough to come and sit on the show.
Absolutely. We love Sam.
Susie, this is Loda, Susie, and Susie met Ethan a few minutes ago. So, and Ethan Dettenmeyer, of course, if you guys are bored with this show, just switch over to Channel 2 and you'll hear Ethan with his combat radio show. And they're talking about always interesting things, huh, and entertainment and stuff.
Entertainment, politics, it's whatever comes up. It's very eclectic.
Really? So they even talk about politics there too?
Yes.
Wow.
Try to stay away, but sometimes it's
right. It's hard, huh?
Yeah.
It's really hard to stay away these days, you know. But it's funny because yesterday one of my Facebook friends put up a post and included something on Israel and the move to Jerusalem of the embassy and everything. And he tagged me and he says, do you want to chime in? I said, I think this time I'll just stay on the sideline. I wrote, politics on Facebook is hazardous to my health. You know?
It's a good call.
It's true. It's
right?
Like you get so many people, too, also that just troll people that have opposite views.
Right.
Just so they can comment and argue. And it's just like, really? You need to get lives.
Right, exactly. And that's what trolls do. I mean, they enjoy causing trouble. That's what they're doing, you know? And it's not always the kind of people you think it is, you know? Sometimes it's people that you might even respect on the street or whatever, you know? But they just have this thing where they've got to throw a wrench in the machine, you know?
Yeah, it sort of lets everybody be like a talk show host or a public personality. Yeah, you know, right. Everyone's like a mini celebrity now.
Yeah, exactly.
And
social media, everybody's a celebrity, you know? They have a couple hundred followers and they're like, yeah, you know. So, Loda, good to see you. Loda's here every week and I get to see her because Ethan does the show and you're behind the scenes on the show. And it's like family at this point. right?
Yes, it's been many years. I've watched your beautiful niece grow up and blossom. I love her. Miss her.
Yeah. I know. Sometimes she comes in. She's eight now, nine. I think she's nine already. And her little sister and stuff, right? So you've seen people grow here.
Yes.
And you've been with us for about 9 years, I think, which is a long time. And, you know, I saw something yesterday on Facebook that says, friends or family, you choose, you know? And it's true. I mean, you guys are family, you know? When you think about family, normally, is not people you choose. You know, you're stuck with whoever is in your family.
And sometimes that's not a good thing.
Right, you know? But to me, I don't know, you know, my dad passed a couple weeks ago, and I'm always reminded by, you know, what did I want to say? He told me so many different things. But that, you know, friends is like, I learned that friends are like family. I will do anything for a friend, just like I would do for my brother, you know? So I think if you can get to that point with people, you can really connect, you know? And I was reading that the key to happiness is having people in your life, belonging, you know? And think of how much it makes sense, you know? I mean, think if you had all the money in the world, but you didn't have any friends or family. You were literally alone.
They're pretty miserable people. Money does not buy happiness.
Right. By itself, no. But if I had somebody and then I got the money, it would help a lot. Yeah, money can buy you so-called friends, but not real friends.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it sort of isolates you in a certain way.
It does, you know.
Maybe like your big mansion fortress.
Yeah, I know. Nobody can even relate to it, you know.
Yeah. It's funny to me how... not politics, but just, you know, topics that are in the news, how money doesn't even buy anything. Because I've said that we've had this conversation over, you know, like the last few months of this thing about, you know, all of this Me Too. These men had multi-millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Why would you need to pressure anybody? They're lining up. You could buy them a drink and have a conversation and you could have slept with people. Why did you need to step over that line and intimidation and all of that stuff?
That's an interesting point.
Think about how many, I mean, there are women who have been pressured in Me Too, and then there are women who would throw themselves at men because they're rich and powerful. So you chose the dark road when you had it made. They were lining up at the door. What are you, crazy?
Exactly, and it goes in reverse, too. You know, my son complains that he can't get a good girlfriend and a decent woman and everything. He's 24. And I told him, maybe you're looking in the wrong places, you know?
Yeah.
You are looking in the wrong places. If you want someone like that, then you don't go after the women that only want the money and stuff, you know? And he complains about girls, you know, wanting this, wanting that. And I'm like, you know, it's always like this. You know, it doesn't matter at what age. There are always the women that are attracted to that. And there's guys that are only attracted to sex. And if you're only attracted to sex, that's the kind of woman you're going to get.
Yeah, to me, you know? The sex part to me is... to me, that's an easy thing. To me, it's like when you're in a relationship, people think it's like, oh, well, to me, it's like then if you're in a relationship, that part, you should be everything to whoever you're with. Like, they want, like, to be with a hooker on the weekend. Be that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, to me, if you are all those things to them when they need it, then they don't need the other one.
Exactly.
You know, play the role. Yeah. I mean, that's like that simple.
Yeah, that's, you know, true.
But I'm saying is, all these rich guys, too, they have the woman with them when they didn't have two nickels to scratch together. Then when they make it, then they go get the idiot who wants you for your money. And it's like...
because they want the younger, you know?
It's so stupid.
Yeah, I know. Wow, what are you going to do, you know? That's what happens. How do you find like young guys today? Are they like materialistic? Are they like, because you know, I mean, I'm totally out of touch with people in their 20s, except for my kids, you know. But still, I don't know a lot about what goes on in their mind. I know there's a lot of complaints about student debt and all that stuff. But as a a person in her 20s, how do you feel? What are some of your concerns today about the future?
I don't know. I felt like when I was at my university, everybody sort of got into couples right away, and they stayed together all 4 years and just right. sort of like watched TV in the dark every night.
Wow, good. What school is this?
I went to UC San Diego. So I just feel like people are sort of like hyper monogamous now. And I, of course, like online dating or apps, like Tinder has really revolutionized dating for people my age, I think, as well. Yeah.
Right, it really has.
I don't know if that's something I'm like worried about so much, but it definitely is like, if you're thinking about, oh, how are things different for young people now?
Right.
That's like number one, how it's different for dating. Yeah.
Right. Now, so let me ask you this. I mean, because the younger people like texting a lot. I mean, but
yeah.
do you see where personal FaceTime with the people is important personally to sit with someone?
Yeah, absolutely. I think people are pretty alienated from each other, probably more than ever.
That's true, right?
Yeah.
And what about talking on the phone? That doesn't happen much either, right?
No, it's so nice, too. I like talking on the phone.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, my kid, for the life of me, I can't get him on the phone, you know?
Oh, my kid either. It's like I can text him all day long and get an answer. Calling, I'm like, are you kidding me? Really?
Really? I know.
Just no answer?
Yeah, no answer.
Huh, I guess people are shy.
It's not about shyness.
It's not about shy. It's just that people are so used to and easier to
yeah.
just text. I've been at the table with my kids, and they've been texting on the phone
yeah.
across from each other. And I'm thinking they're talking to other people. They were actually talking to each other.
To
I was
each other.
So
at
angry.
The table.
I said,
oh, my God.
Put that away or I'll throw that phone out. I'm just
yeah.
so,
wow.
like, really, it's crazy. That's and it's not uncommon.
Yeah.
It's a little less spontaneous, you know, like you get a second to think, to write what you want to say before you say it and see how it looks.
Yeah.
It's like it's sort of like trimming the fat off the conversation a little
yeah.
bit more.
But I think it
lengthy.
Gives people also, too, on the other side of it, gives people a chance to be
more bold.
Not,
yeah,
yeah. than they would be. And they are
yeah.
sometimes not as nice because
yeah, you would
they're
think
hiding
they would.
Behind,
yeah, right.
you know, this texting and not having the conversation to
yeah.
your face.
You'd think like typing it out and like seeing it would make them be more
yeah.
careful. But I guess not, yeah.
No, I mean, think how impersonal typing really is, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it started with typewriters to type documents and stuff like that, you know? It
yeah.
was never a personal thing. It's not like talking or
yeah.
being in the same room with someone.
Yeah, well, when you're talking, you have your own voice, and you have to hear what you're saying in your voice, and so does the other person.
Right.
It's sort of more like whatever you say is more closely tied to you.
Right.
Because it's coming out of you, you know?
You have mm-hmm. to see something. They, Key and Peele did this one thing on their show.
So funny.
And they did it about texting.
Uh-huh.
And it was hilarious. He texts Keele like, oh, so you want to go somewhere? And then you see Peele like sitting there going, oh, sure, you know, yeah, whatever. Whatever. I mean, you don't hear the inflection in somebody's voice. So it was
yeah.
this whole misunderstanding over oh. what somebody interpreted in text. It's hilarious.
That's funny, you know. So, Laura, we were talking just before you came in about this new book I'm reading called Homo Deus, and it's a brief history of tomorrow. And this sociologist happened to be Israeli too, Yuval Noah Harari, wrote the book, and it's about like the trends of where humanity is going in the near and far future, you know. And so I started discussing with Susie, and I wanted to bring you into the conversation. Let me ask you this. If you knew that you would never die, would you change the way you live in your life today? What would you do differently?
It's so funny because I'm retired now, and I've had this sort of this epiphany too. Like I just signed up this week to take guitar lessons. I went all the things that I never did while I was working. I'm starting to do because I'm saying is because you know you only have so much life. So why are you not doing the things you always wanted to do?
Right.
So if I had the chance to live forever, I would just add more things that I never took the chance or the opportunity to do, and I would do it now.
Right. And then you'd run out of things to do, and then what would we do? You
know? To me, you would never run out of things to do. To me, like, I really admire you.
Like 150 you read all the years.
Time,
I mean, think
and
if
you learn all the time. When you read all the time, don't you feel like you're learning all the time?
No, I do. But I think, like, let's say, for example, you did die, but you had 150 years to live, right? It's still different, though. And I was telling her, I said, if you knew you live forever, right, or a long time, much longer time, you probably would not take chances like death-defying things, because you would know you'd be shortening your life. You know, you'd be out of the game. Whereas if you don't do anything like this, you'd live forever. You know, so people might live a little more like thinking like, hey, we're here for the long haul. We better learn how to get along, you know. So I'm thinking some things like this might happen too. But, you know, it's not an exaggeration, because in the book he explains to you, he says, look, death is not something that God wills on us. It's not like punishment. It's not this. It's not that. It's just... To humanity, to science, it's just a problem, a technical problem to be solved. And, you know, I mean, look, we've conquered plague and war and famine and everything. And now what remains, you know? And that's the thing. So it gets you to think a lot, you know? But...
I think the problem is, in all of these situations, the problem is human beings. Because if you think about it, people think, oh my God, they're communists. The pure thought of communism is everybody living together and sharing the bounty of what's available.
Right.
But human beings, the reason that communism was what it was, because human beings like took that opportunity to make it communism was like dictatorship by group. It wasn't communism. It wasn't living together and right. sharing all the stuff. It was dictatorship by group where they told you what to do. So I think human beings...
You're talking about socialism and communism. I think that's what you're saying, right? Because you're talking about like a sharing society. That's not necessarily what a communism is. Communism is the political part of socialism, I think, no?
What I'm saying is what it's supposed to be
right.
and what it ended up being.
It's two different
things. Human beings.
Right, right. Well, but that's the thing. I mean, it's human beings, because the whole thing created by human beings. So, yeah. But the thing is that people have tried that. You know, interestingly enough, in Israel, like when it was just founded, you'd have like pioneers coming from different places, and they would just try to share the resources. They would have something called the kibbutz, if you've heard of that. And that's just a commune of a lot of people. They raise your kids together collectively, and everybody would work in the fields and, you know, and all that stuff. So, but it hasn't, it's an idea that's run its course pretty much. You know, it's not happening anymore, because that, I don't know, that system is not sustainable, you know?
But it's not sustainable because of people, I think.
But well, I mean, but how sustainable is what we're doing now? We're sort of like accelerating towards some kind of crisis.
Yeah, I agree.
It's yeah.
really kind of, right now to me, the world is really scary. I would never have thought in 1,000 years that we would have elected leaders who are so sometimes self-centered and, you know,
yeah.
selfish about what the needs are. They're not
right.
interested in what's happening with people. They are yeah. just interested in what's happening to a rich group. And I would have never,
yeah.
ever thought that would have happened.
We're all kind of learning, like, what we're capable of. Like, when
yes.
you talk about, like, oh, human beings are, like, maybe a problem in some ways, yeah.
Yeah, well, we're the problem and we're the solution
yes.
also, you know
yeah.
I mean? That's what the planet's about, people. And communism and socialism is about how people get along. So, yeah, people did create it that way, but it's an abuse, you know? It's just like you mentioned in the current climate of politics today, we're seeing things that we haven't seen in democracy for a while.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it is. You know, people going after their own interest, although people will say that politicians always have, but I think this has been taken to the extreme.
Yeah, it's more blatant.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So, Yeah, you know, but that's why. But I invite political debate, but some people don't know how to debate politics, right?
And that's, you said, very the trolls, angry and personal,
right? You know, and name calling and stuff. So how do you even have a conversation, a decent conversation, where everybody wants the other side to shut up and not say anything?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but that's what I've ended up doing. I'm like, on Facebook, there's no way I'm putting up out my politics. You know, it's just too crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of like homework too required for like new political ideas that I think people probably aren't really doing, including myself, of course, you know.
Like, well, you know, who's got time for all this politics?
Yeah. I don't know, like if you read like pamphlets from like the 60s, they're so academic and like difficult to read,
right.
You know, and you think about everyone was reading them, or all, students anyway, everywhere.
Right.
I think people are sort of like very quick to be political, but I think probably less informed.
Not very not educated about it. And if you really think about it, what's the sad thing is, on both sides, there are things to be had, or, you know, to take in on each side. But each side is just so, like, brick wall, like, I don't want to listen to you.
Yeah.
That's what happens, and a lot of people are like that, and it's unfortunate because, and like you said, people are often ignorant about what it is they're arguing about. They haven't done the research. They don't know.
Yeah, people spend, you know, careers studying one issue. So it's really, it takes a lot of effort to be able to, like, say anything, you know?
Right. No, I mean, you know, if you're not, and we can see what happens with all this fake news and all this, like, irresponsible opinion out there. It just, you know, it amazes me and the way
sort of
how
like
people...
pop politics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sad. To me, people take their news from what they see on Facebook. And,
right.
And a lot of times people post things that are totally and completely false. If I see something like that is, like somebody posts, you know, something that I'm friends with.
Yeah.
And they say, like one person posted during the campaign, I think, they said that Donald Trump had called President Obama the N-word. And I was like, say what?
Yeah.
So I go and I research and go and try to find a credible news source that posted this. Of course, it's not. And I go back on and I tell the person, this is a lie. Because I'm like,
it's a stunning allegation.
He has, to me, he's bad enough on his own.
Yes.
Just being himself. Don't add and make it, you know, this falsehood by saying, you know, lies.
Yeah, everything gets brought to the extreme.
Yeah, just don't go there. So I went back and I said, that's a lie. That's absolutely a lie.
Yeah.
And that's what most people don't do what I do, is they just repost it. And then they repost it, and then it becomes, oh, that he did that. No, he didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a real problem.
And, you know, even in network news, let's say like CNN and Fox and ABC and all those, you know, we often... you stick with one channel and you watch it all the time. Like, I've always liked CNN because it was like the first. They've always had good coverage of the Iraqi war and all that. So that's how I got into CNN. But you realize if you only listen to one station, you're always going to hear the same side and the same point of view, you know? So because media do take sides, whether you like it or not, you know?
Yeah.
And they don't hide it either. You know, so the thing is that you have to balance what you're watching, what you're reading, and definitely not take it from Facebook, your news.
Because then it just makes it harder for people to talk to each other.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if you're like, you don't know who puts up the news on Facebook. You know, it's mostly some cockamamie websites you never heard of.
Yeah, mostly.
Right.
When I was younger, I was in journalism, and it was who, what, when, where, and sometimes how.
Right.
That was it. You were supposed to have absolutely no opinion when you're talking about the news. Now, if you're doing an editorial, you can have an opinion. But if you're reporting the news, you're supposed to have no opinion. That whole entire scheme is gone.
That's so interesting.
Right.
But if that was what it was supposed to be, when I did a news story, I didn't say, oh, you know, so-and-so is going to, you know, be elected. What a jerk. I mean, I didn't have, you don't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just report what is, and then people can get what they want out of it. That's what news was supposed to be about.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting to me after being taught that, seeing how...
All the news is slanted, right?
All of it is slanted.
A lot of bias.
Like, even this simple thing, I remember watching a story, and one of the reporters, like, rolled... Like, that back when I was growing up, that was a no-no. Rolled his eyes.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's lending an opinion.
Yeah.
Even that is lending an opinion.
Yeah. Now yeah. it's become so much like a entertainment, you know?
Yeah.
Where it's more entertaining to have a stance than to just report the facts.
Yeah, right.
So
yeah.
that's
yeah,
what
and,
will do.
And, you know, and you got to be aware when magazines and newspapers do that, you know? And sometimes I just try to filter it out and stuff. And that's one thing is that when you were talking about reporting the news and stuff, I also remember in journalism where they taught us that as much as what you're saying is the ideal, it doesn't happen because it does get filtered through the media, you know, the news itself. So
right.
they're always going to give it some kind of like different color than what the other station might do, you know. And we have to be aware of it. It's not a necessarily a good or a bad thing, but we have to understand that if you can't change it, at least be aware of that it's happening, you know. So, yeah. Now, check this out. This is a headline that just came up. By the way, it's showing us here on CNN.com that the government is going to shut down in about 10 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the countdown now. No, you know, it's like every year it's the same thing, right?
Yeah.
We're
going to
shut down the government. We're going to shut down the government. So obviously our politicians can't work with each other.
Which is crazy.
Haven't for a while, you know. And
it's performative.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, man, but there's a lot of confrontation in Congress as well, and I don't know what the answer's going to be. You know, we gotta and think about us. We're bombarded with so much of these politics all of a sudden. It never used to be like that. You know, politics would be sort of like in the background. We trusted our public servants to do what they're supposed to do. And today everybody's polarized and galvanized and, you know, and everything.
Do you think it'll ever go back to sort of like receding from the
I think
public
eventually,
attention? Yeah.
Eventually we might find someone who can unify, you know. But
yeah.
I think we have to come together first, you know. And, you know, I don't know. I feel that this division did not start a year ago.
I sort of feel like know? It's so sensational that
yeah.
it's going to be hard for people to go back to when it was, you know, boring.
I hope so.
What are we
going
to have to talk about, you know, after?
Right.
I would like not to have to talk about that.
Yeah, me too.
I know. These are very uncertain times, and who knows, you know. So, but before we go, I wanted to bring up, by the way, I am joined by Susie today, and we also have a surprise guest, Laura, and who, again, I must point out that is family. And we love you, and I love you, and I hope that I can always be there for you guys.
Oh,
you know?
Thank you, Sam. You have been.
Yeah, awesome.
And for anybody who can't see because of the we're on the radio, he has a sporting this really nice beard now.
I've given it away on the show before when I first started, but it's getting longer. And thank you, first of all, for the kind words. A lot of people have given me compliments about it in the past couple of weeks. Just to repeat what I said before, being Jewish, the tradition calls for when your mother or your father dies that you don't shave for a month and or get your hair cut, anything like that. Why exactly, I don't know, but I know that it does keep me connected. It reminds me I'm still mourning, you know. It's not just the first seven days, and
yeah.
then that's it, you know. And I'm having to explain to people and stuff, so it brings up my dad all the time, and that's a great thing. So, but you know what? It's prickly, you know. It's like you can constantly feel it on your face. It feels like you have a beard.
Uh-huh.
And plus, you know, if I kept it, I would trim it a little bit. I don't like a wild beard, you know. I like a trim, clean-cut one if I did. But I'm very convinced I'll go back to clean-shaven and start looking my age rather than like some professor that's twice my age. Come on. So that's funny. Also, finally, I mean, I'm going to start a big conversation, but we only have 5 minutes. So let's quickly just go around the room. Susie, the concept of God, what does it mean to you?
The concept of God, I think probably there's like some God in everybody, And when you can, when people come together, that's God finding himself. You know?
But how was this whole universe created? Was that something that you ponder sometimes? I mean, how did we get here and where are we going?
I don't know. I think it could go either way, that it was, that it might not have been created by somebody, and it definitely also could have.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
You still have a long life to develop that opinion,
yeah.
Right? There you go. And Lorna, how about you? What role does God play in your life, if any?
I believe that there is something, that creator of light, creator of, you know, the world, I believe it's something that has to do with goodness and, you know, love and compassion for a fellow man. Science says, you know, that, you know, the world was created, you know, in so many years and involved in this, that, and the other. Well, in the Bible, in the Jewish,
Judeo-Christian Bible.
It says that he created the heaven and the earth. It didn't say he did it in a couple of days or whatever, or to me, the whole entire concept of a day or whatever may not have been what we think it is.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
I'm just saying is I'm still open to the possibility of that being truth. But
not
I definitely
mutually exclusive.
Right. Yeah. But I also believe that God is for all people. It's not, you know, only for, you know, evangelical Christians or only for I believe that he supports many different facets of religion or beliefs.
Well, if God created all of us, why wouldn't he, right?
Right.
I mean, we're all equal in God's eyes. And whether you look at it as a religious thing or just like a totally non-religious thing, I mean, even if you believe in science and there was a force and everything, I think everybody has to admit there had to be intelligence behind it, even if it took 14 billion years to arrive at this. But just think about it, from cosmic dust to arrive at this watch or something.
Yeah.
You know, or going, or rockets like going to the moon and stuff. The things that we build, the body, the human body itself, the way it sustains itself, the way the planet Earth sustains itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you just think about that, you realize there has to be intelligence behind this.
Yeah.
It can't just happen. And indeed, if there is to this intelligence, if you create humanity, does it really matter? I mean, you're the one that creates them differently. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it doesn't matter how you look at things, even scientifically, you always end up with the concept of God one way or another. Because there, you always get to the point where, so how did it all start?
Exactly.
Right? So the big question is, where do we come from and where we're going? And on that note, folks... Susie, thank you again.
Thank you.
For joining me. Lorna, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
For always adding color to the show. Everybody have a great weekend. Take good care of yourselves, and we'll see you all on Monday.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.